This week, on a very special Thanksgiving episode of Movies On Up, another famous director bites the space dust, bows out of Star Wars. We talk a lot of Twilight as it made a lot of money and discuss where it belongs in the pantheon of great sagas.
We also have some Tom Hardy news when it comes to video game movies and have a brief discussion about what works and what doesn't work when it comes to video games. And due to the season, we talk about what we're thankful for in the world of movies.
And, of course, we watch some trailers.
Take it away, theme song.
What's up? This is Movies On Up, episode 29, Humans, the Other White Meat. Unless you're black, then it's dark meat. Or if you're Asian, then it's yellow meat. Or if you're Native American, it's red meat. That is not my own opinion. That is a tagline for a movie that break and cycle here. We didn't talk about last week. We'll probably talk about this week later on in the podcast in one of our very last segments. So stay tuned. And if you can just remember the movie that I tell you to watch, tweet it at us at Movies On Up. Send it off in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. Or you can get at us on Facebook, which you can find from moviesonup.com. We actually have the slash now. You can just go to facebook.com/moviesonup. That'll work too. Or if you want to just check out our website, moviesonup.com, you can do that too. We're accommodating in that way. We are doing the two-man weave this week like we teased last week, except we made a minor change. Kevin, not here. I'm here, as I usually am. Filling in for Kevin this week is Dave.
I'm here.
Dave's here. Yeah,
I was going to take the week off, but I didn't.
Yeah, the thought of me doing this by myself spurred Dave into action. He's like, oh, no. And I'm spoiler alert, I'm thankful that Dave is here to do the podcast and distract me by typing secret messages on the Google Doc for our outline. So
we always have them printed and we're reading off of paper, but now we're both looking at them in the computer so I can type secret messages to them.
Yeah, it's like a Gene Hackman movie, and it freaks me out. I can't deal with it very well. So if you ever want to fuck with me, that's a good way to do it. Get Dave to add you on our Google Docs, and you can type things to me while I'm looking at it, and that'll just send me over the edge. So now we've totally got off the rails. We did the tagline, so if you have an idea what that is, send it to us in the ways that I described. Maybe we'll give you a prize. We plugged the Twitters, the Facebooks, our website, our Gmail. With Kevin not being here, we have an Instagram. I don't know what it does. I think we post pictures of stuff. Or
today would be a good day to have a picture of us for once.
Why?
You're in like a full suit and tie. I'm in like a Batman shirt.
Suit.
With blue shoes on.
Because yeah. We look especially rad today.
Yeah, we're all stylish today.
Yeah.
So look for that on our Instagram.
Yeah, that's never going to happen. And you all can be thankful for that. You don't have to see what Dave and I look like. That would probably ruin your day. As a whole, the movie industry's day did not get ruined. It almost got made with what came out last week. Of course, it was Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2, Electric Boogaloo, breaking all sorts, well, helping to break, make 20,012. That is the year of our Lord, 20,012. A very, very successful year, and maybe one of the most successful in the history of forevers.
It was the sixth best weekend ever.
In the history of forevers.
Like, not the movie. The overall box office this weekend, sixth best ever. Because Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2 opened at number one with $141 million.
That's a lot of money. And we didn't do an over-under last week, as was pointed out.
I was going to go 140.
Oh, God.
Like, that was actually the over-under. And I was probably going to skew under.
I was this weekend cavorting with Kevin and his fiance and some other listeners of the podcast, and Dana had mentioned we didn't do an over under, and you know she just pretty quickly threw out 100, and I said, oh, definitely over.
Yeah.
She said 120. I said over.
Yeah.
And that's where
I
it stopped.
I think 140 but I was gonna go, because I thought best case scenario was 140-150. I didn't think it hit that. It's not the best opening for them, I don't believe, but that's still pretty impressive. That was a $34,000 per screen average. These movies, $120 million budget. So in the first week, it's over its budget. I brought in another $10 million on Monday. So it's just going to keep.
And I'm sure this weekend will be big too.
It's going to end in that 250, 275 range at least. Speaking of another one that's going to hit that 200 mark, and I don't know if it'll has the legs to get to 250, but Skyfall came in at number two. It added another 41 million. So it's still a 53% drop off its opening week, but it sits at 160 after 2 weeks. Lincoln expanded into 1,775 screens. $21 million. That's pretty impressive. That's an 11,859 per screen average, which a little more than Skyfall. Wreck-It Ralph came in at fourth. It added another $18 million. So your top four movies, 18 plus.
That's how you get one of the top six weekends of all time with, you know, just essentially one new release. Everything else, Wreck-It Ralph has been out for probably about a month now. Skyfall was in its second week here domestically. And really, all they did was add Twilight, and that's kind of a big deal.
And they expanded Lincoln. But sure. But look at the top four. Twilight has its audience.
Yeah.
Skyfall, that's your like action movie that's a little bit more.
Plus, I mean, it's a big franchise.
Yeah.
You know, Bond
Lincoln,
has a built-in audience.
Big name, like Daniel Day-Lewis, Steven Spielberg. It's like you're more
Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah. And then Wreck-It Ralph, like the family movie. Like,
sure.
Your top four.
It's a perfect mix.
It's something for everybody. And then at five and six were Argo and Flight. Flight was fifth. Argo still pulling in $4 million. It has a chance at $100 million for Argo. It's sitting at just under $92 million right now. It is on its way down, but that's just a couple more weeks of, you know, $2.5 million on a weekend. So another interesting thing in the top 10, Job Tok Hai Jaan, a Bollywood movie, came in at number eight with $1.2 million. So you don't see that a whole lot. You don't see Bollywood's open here, let alone open in the top 10. As far as a couple
on the sixth biggest weekend ever.
Yeah, a couple notable limited releases. Silver Lining Playbook opened on 16 screens for $443,000. Pretty impressive. That's a $27,600 per screen average. And Anna Karenina, 16 screens, $320,000. So that's a $20,000 per screen average. So, I mean, it was a good week to go to the movies. Like, there was a lot out there. And the thing that's great is, like, you go, I mean, take away Twilight, just because I'm not in that audience. 2 through 6, I would see those movies.
Do you mean Twilight's not made for dudes with Batman shirts?
No, I
agree with you. There's still, I've seen Skyfall, I've seen Wreck-It Ralph, I've seen Flight. I still have to go see Argo, but that's exactly.
You did see Flight?
Yeah, no, I saw Flight Friday. It was really well written. Denzel's a great actor. That's not really, shouldn't really surprise anyone. I thought at times Zemeckis was a little bit on the nose with, you
know, too much?
Too much, yes. Like, hey, really look at what I'm doing here. But, I mean, apart from that, like, I thought the movie was good. It's pretty good look at addiction and the life of an addict. And with the plane crash, I don't think I'm spoiling anything saying that there's a plane crash in the movie. But I think that that's kind of an interesting plot device that you do kind of want to, you know, root for the addict, you know, because of what he was able to do. And, you know, it's a little bit long of a movie, so it drags at some points, but overall I thought it was really good. I think it's more well written than it was well acted, but that's usually just where people go.
I was just told via Google Doc to stop fucking with the mic stand.
With a lot of exclamation points.
I got distracted.
Yeah,
this
is
a terrible idea. Where do you think Twilight stands as far as sagas go? I mean, obviously it's not for us, but where do you think it stands? Like, do you think it has the staying power of a Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings or even Star Wars, where I think all of those 10 years from now will still be finding new fans.
Yeah, I think.
Do you think Twilight has that ability?
I think it probably does. I mean, maybe it's hard to forecast 10 years. I would guess that, you know, some of the Twihards may have babies at some point, like little vampire babies, and then eventually.
Hopefully the neighbor kid doesn't fuck them.
Yeah, because that's just creepy. But at some point, you know, they'll introduce, and like, you know, like you would introduce the things that you like to your kids, and you know, I'm just waiting to impregnate some unsuspecting woman so that I can show my offspring Star Wars. That's really, I mean, I don't want to raise the kid. I just want to say, hey, there's Star Wars, Luke Skywalker. That's all I want to do. So, I mean, I think that there are, you know, folks of a slightly newer vintage than us that grew up on Harry Potter and they grew up on Twilight that'll eventually do that. I don't know that they're going to be necessarily as big as they are now, but I think they'll be around. I think for that especially, like if you look at a Venn diagram between Harry Potter fans and Twilight fans, I feel like there's a very large overlap. Maybe like there is with Star Wars and Lord of the Rings. I'm not real sure. I mean, I like them both.
I disagree, but I see where you're going. I think Harry Potter is more... I think even Twihards would be more apt to watch Harry Potter with their kids in 10 years.
I'm not the target audience for either of those, but I am way more likely to watch all of the Harry Potter movies, and I know there are way more of them than I am to watch another 20 minutes of Twilight. I've had my fill.
I saw the first one.
I've seen the first two.
Ew.
Fuck, seriously. And that's what I'm saying. I draw the line.
I got together with a couple dudes and opened a box of wine and watched it a few years ago.
You know, we could probably fill an entire podcast of like movies you should not have seen, but you saw with dudes.
That's something we could do. Because I've been trying
top
to think,
five movies.
I've been trying to think of ideas or like ideas for different things. That's actually one. Movies you watch with dudes that you shouldn't have.
Yeah, that'd be a good one if we can get some people to actually fess up to. Like, that'd be a fun audience participation story. What's becoming sort of audience participation in that we do this every week and we make you listen to it. Because, again, it's a third of my podcast and I like Star Wars. I'm just going to go ahead and do Star Wars news in air quotes right at the top here. Long, long time ago, in a podcast very much like this one, Dave hoped that Brad Bird would direct Episode 7. Well, he said on Twitter that he's not. And, just for good measure, 1952 isn't a code name for Episode 7. Though, if you were to play conspiracy theorist, isn't that exactly what someone who is trying to keep their involvement in a Star Wars movie would say?
Now, I know 1952 isn't Episode 7.
Blue Harvest? Anyone?
But... that doesn't mean Brad Bird couldn't do, because 52 is getting ready to be made. Star Wars is getting ready to be written. So he could do both.
It's he could, like, but I think he just said he's not going to.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it's every week now. Brenda Chapman from Brave this week was, her name was thrown out there. Colin Tarkovsky from Safety Not Guaranteed, his name was out there.
Yeah, I meant to bring that up, but I'm glad you remembered it, because that's why I wanted to ask you about it.
Yeah.
Because you like that movie.
Oh, I love that movie. But, and I think Favreau's name is starting to surface out there. Like, there's just, every week.
It'll be everybody.
Every week we're going to go through this, like yeah. I've said. And, I mean, we could make the decision to just wait until we have real news, but where's the fun in that?
And the specific reason is because, you know, Brad Bird was your pick.
Yeah.
So I wanted to say that, okay, he's out. And then, you know, maybe we won't say anything until they either cast a director, which they said they're very close, yeah. Or if they say, hey, Matthew Vaughn's not going to do it. Because, I mean, that's my guy. So, yeah, I guess in the meantime, we'll just kind of...
Because, I mean, it's to the point where I don't even buy that Brad Bird's out of the running now. Like, I don't buy that he's...
I do. I mean, they kind of said, hey, you know, you're being talked about for this and you haven't confirmed or denied. And he was like, no, I'm not doing it. And I guess, like, he could try and be cagey. But he just said, no, I'm not doing it. Speaking of being cagey, Carrie Fisher pulls a Jedi mind trick on a Force.net writer. The writer was at a book signing of hers, I think it was in New Jersey, and asked if she was going to be in Episode 7. She looked at him and said, well, I thought that was common knowledge. Later on, apparently her reps are pumping the brakes there, they told E! Online that everything Carrie Fisher said was tongue-in-cheek. But isn't that exactly what the rep of someone who wanted to keep their involvement in a new Star Wars movie a secret would say?
Do we want Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford?
Yeah.
Do we?
Yeah. I don't want them to be...
Do we want them killed off early, or do we want them...
I think if you get three of them in the movie, which I think you will, I don't think that Harrison Ford will see the end of it. I think
there's got to be a little Han Leia kid out there, right?
Oh, I guess there would be two. Well, actually, there could very easily be three. It just depends on at what point they want to pick up with the novels. Because, yeah, they have kids in the novels.
If you ignore the novels, and these are just picking up after 4, 5, and 6, like, you could do whatever you want. They could have one kid.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it would have to. And I think that's where, you know, the main focus would be. But, you know, there was a death scene planned for Han Solo in Jedi, and they that got cut really late. So I would not be surprised at all if Indiana Jones bites the dust in this one. A guy that I would cry if he dies in episode 7. If he is going to be in episode 7, is the coolest brother, the only brother in the galaxy, really. That's Billy Dee Williams. TMZ asked him if he would come back, and he, in very Billy Dee fashion, said, I suppose so.
I guess I'm interested in the movies. I want to know more about plot, I guess, because
I don't want to know anything about plot.
That's true, but I don't want to see these, like, six... I don't want to see Mark Hamill out there doing stuff. Like, I guess I'm just... I'm wary. I don't want it to be... I guess what I'm trying... I don't want them to feel like, oh, we have to have it center on Luke and Han and Leia. Like, if they're willing to
I don't think it will.
Bring them back and have them as parts in it, like, if Luke's more of a Obi-Wan type, like, I guess I can... Or even a Yoda type, where he's just off in isolation.
I think that's what it would be. It'd be kind of a combo of the two. He's running the new Jedi Academy.
But then at the same time, I don't want it to be hokey. Like, I guess I'm putting a lot of trust in
Arndt. Yeah.
Because, I don't know. It screams, there's got to be a fine line there.
Yeah, but I mean...
I understand them involved in the story, but I don't want them to be the story.
How could you have, though, a Star Wars movie that takes place after Return of the Jedi and not have those characters? You can't just write them out.
I understand that.
You know,
so
they have to be there. They just can't be the focus. I think we've focused entirely too much time already on Star Wars for this particular podcast, so we'll just move on to something else that's not at all nerdy. As if you needed more reasons to begin your unexpected journey, The Hobbit gives you three more. A 9-minute prologue for Star Trek Into Darkness, a new trailer for Man of Steel, and the first trailer for The Wolverine.
I was going to see The Hobbit anyway.
Yeah. Now I'm just going to be there early.
I might be in the minority. I hate this prologue shit. I hate this, we're going to show the first 6 to 9 minutes of a movie. I don't want that.
Yeah.
I want to wait.
Would be fine.
I don't want to see the first 9 minutes of Star Trek and then have to wait to see the rest. Like,
yeah.
And I'm excited about Star Trek. So I don't like this 9-minute shit. Like, they did it with the last two Batmans. I don't know. Man of Steel, I could care less about. I really give no fucks about that movie. Wolverine, I'm interested in. That's a make it or break it trailer. Because Origins sucked, and they're doing everything they can to make sure this movie isn't that. I need to know that that's what they did. And I'm getting my goddamned hand off the mic stand. But like, that's a make or break trailer. That really is.
I'm interested to see what they do with it. I think you're exactly right. Wolverine's a cool character that they've kind of screwed over in the past couple movies. So this. They can kind of set things right with, and the place is going to be packed full of nerds. So you have your target audience right there. You need to impress them. I don't think you need to do it in 9 minutes. That's what trailers are for.
Because that's the thing. We haven't even seen a trailer for Star Trek.
Right. And you're
so you're
going to get.
You're giving us a 9-minute prologue before we've even seen a teaser.
Yeah. So, I mean, what are you going to tease after that? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's going to kind of be a bit of a letdown. Something that is absolutely going to let you down, Dave. James Wan, Rose Byrne, Patrick Wilson, all back for Insidious Chapter 2. The movie going to pick up right where the first one left off. And by that, I mean being made on the cheap and raking in the cash. The first one was made for about $1.5 million and made $97 million. It's no surprise they're making a second one.
This movie makes me so angry. Like, I know. So few movies just make me angry because it had so much potential. The first like 40, 45 minutes of this movie were fucking great. And I love Rose Byrne. Like, I absolutely love Rose Byrne. But then it just took a turn and it's like, yeah. Like,
I read online where somebody said it was like two separate horror movies that got put together.
It was one that was really good, and then somebody took a shit on some film, and that's what the rest of it was. The only thing scary was that somebody read this and thought, we should film this.
I agree with you that I think the first part was really good, but I didn't get as angry as you did about the ending.
Damn it. Plus, the thing looked like Darth Maul, and it made me remember episode 1. It just made me angry again. Like, fuck. Oh, fuck. I hate this movie so bad.
So, you're not, that won't be our, like, movies on up night out at the theater.
I'll go see it.
But I'll do it angry. So, yeah, if you want to go see a movie with an angry Dave, Insidious Chapter 2. might be for you. If you want to go see a movie with a shit ton of people in it, and this is an indie movie with Sylvester Stallone. Now, those two things you wouldn't normally put together, but they've put together a hell of a cast here, and it's not for The Expendables 3. Stallone will star with Thomas Jane, who could be in an Expendables movie, Carrie Elwes, Tom Berenger, Keira Sedgwick, Kevin Connolly, Kelsey Grammer, Ryan Kwanten, David O'Hara, Lauren Cohan, Nelly, Danny Aiello, and Terry Crews, who wasn't in a couple Expendables movies, in Reach Me, written by Stallone's Cobra co-star, John Herzfeld. The plot centers around a bunch of seemingly unrelated characters whose lives cross, not unlike Crash, not the Cronenberg Crash, the bad one, but with a self-help twist.
This cast is weird.
Yes.
I like Ryan Kwanten, though. Like, he's kind of one that I'd almost see it just for him.
I like him.
I like him, and I like Terry Crews.
Yeah.
And I like Tommy Jane.
Sure. We like Carrie Elwes, for the most part. Like Lauren Cohan, Walking Dead. Good show.
Who's she on Walking Dead?
She is Glenn's girlfriend.
Oh, Maggie.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't know you watched that.
Oh, I hate it, but I watch it every week. Aaron and Kayla like it, so we watch it. It's terrible.
Something else you don't like, you don't like a lot of shit, I'm Angry Dave, is the Amazing Spider-Man. Just for you, there are four actors testing for the part of Harry Osborn, which will seemingly be in the next movie. Sam Coughlin from Hunger Games: Catching Fire, and I guess he was in Snow White and the Huntsman. Neither of us saw
and
that.
And the last Pirates.
Oh, the most recent Pirates, which I didn't see either, so add that to the list. Eddie Redmayne from My Week with Marilyn and the upcoming Les Mis. Douglas Booth from LOL and Noah. And Boyd Holbrook from Milk and The Host. One of those folks looks like they're going to be Harry Osborn.
I
don't care.
I really disliked the Spider-Man movie. I really did.
I know you did.
I like Shailene Woodley as Mary Jane, but if you cast, like, I don't buy, Andrew Garfield looks so old.
Wait, he's the Spider-Man that looks old? We just came off Tobey Maguire, and
no,
Andrew Garfield looks old?
I understand that, but everybody else looked old, too. Like, now you're adding Shailene Woodley, who looks like a high school kid. So you're going to have her acting off of Emma Stone and Andrew Garfield. He's going to look like a pedo. And just like all these dudes are younger looking. Like now you're going for high school kids when I don't like it. I didn't like this movie.
If you want to see me. Christopher McQuarrie possibly doing the impossible, making a movie that Dave likes, Mission Impossible 5.
I like that McQuarrie's getting all sorts of work now. Because Way of the Gun was amazing, and then he disappeared for a while. He's got
like a decade.
Yeah, he's got Jack Reacher coming out. He's got that Jack Ryan like spinoff that he's gonna be doing, and then Mission Impossible 5. So he's getting like good projects,
big ones.
Yeah,
like big franchises that Jack Ryan, you know.
Yeah,
spinoff
Mission Impossible and Jack Reacher is supposed to be like. I don't know why it took a decade for studios to think like, oh, this dude can direct, but. All right. Oh, yeah. He also wrote Valkyrie, that German Tom Cruise movie.
I didn't see that.
That Bryan Singer Valkyrie, the one where the German movie.
I know which movie you're talking about. I didn't see it.
I mean, so he wrote it, really. And Tom Cruise was on there, so it's just.
That makes Jack Reacher,
Mission
Impossible.
Impossible.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
I mean,
there's your
giving
connection.
Him work. I'm happy about that.
Sure. Evan Rachel Wood getting some work. She lands the female lead in 10 Things I Hate About Life, the new film from Jill Unger. 10 Things I Hate About You, which is fine with me. I like that movie.
I like her. It's not necessarily a sequel.
Well.
It's about a dude and a chick that meet each other while trying to kill themselves, and then each other find reasons to
kill themselves.
To like life. So it's a rom-com that centers around suicide, which is...
What's funnier than that?
Well, it's a lot like a Nick Hornby book that we talked about that's becoming a movie with Pierce Brosnan and I forget who else, Emma Roberts maybe. Oh, no, Imogen Poots. But what happened to her?
What happened to Evan Rachel Wood?
Like, she was on pace to be a star. And then, I don't know if it was the Manson or what happened, but she just kind of, 13 launched her. And she carried that movie. And that looked like, you watched 13, if you watched it now and didn't know any history there, you would think, like, that chick is going to be a star. Like, she carried that movie. I mean, she had a bit part in The Wrestler. Like, she showed up there, but as far as, like, headlining movies, she... I mean, she's shown up in stuff, but Across the Universe is, like, the only other thing that she, like, headlined.
Do you think that Manson ruined... Did he ruin Rose McGowan, too?
Probably.
Yeah.
Because even Rodriguez couldn't save her as much as he tried.
Yeah, and is still trying. Isn't he attached to that Red Sonja?
I think he's off it now.
Okay, because I know he was on it, and it was like, oh, hey, surprise, she's going to play the lead. And who knows, maybe that movie will never happen. That'd probably be fine with me, I think. One movie that does look like it's going to happen, it's been in the works for quite a while, but now we've actually got a star attached to play Sam Fisher in the Splinter Cell movie. It'd be Tom Hardy. The sexy star has signed on to play the super spy in Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell. Eric Warren Singer from The International will provide the script for the video game adaptation. No director is attached as of yet.
I like it. I mean, I like Tom Hardy.
I know you do.
It's funny. This probably should have been right after the Christopher McQuarrie thing, because the studio was looking at Tom Hardy to be the lead in the Jack Ryan spinoff. I don't think he would want to now, because it might be too similar.
I think it's very similar. Yeah. We're talking Tom Clancy
universe. You're talking
universe.
Spy yeah. movie stuff. So this probably kills that, but I like Hardy. I buy him as Sam Fisher. I want to hope this is good. Like, I know I talked shit about it when we first talked about the Splinter Cell movie, because video game movies have such a bad rap, but this could be a step in the right direction.
I guess it could be, because it's not, you know, video gamey. It's set, you know, kind of in the real world with plausible situations. So it wouldn't necessarily seem, you know, like Resident Evil or Doom or something like that. A movie like this could work. On the flip side of it, you know, you mentioned video game movies that maybe they don't work. You know, the Assassin's Creed movie's getting a little bit of traction with Fassbender.
At first, when that was first announced, I didn't think it was going to happen. Now there's, like, movement. So, I mean, you have Tom Hardy and Michael Fassbender, who are two of the most, not just by me, but most desirable stars right now. Like, everybody wants them in their movies. They're both attached to video game franchises. Is this a step in the... Are these potentially something that won't have the bad rap about video games?
I feel like it goes in cycles where they'll try a couple and it never seems like they work. I can remember when Jake Gyllenhaal did the Prince of Persia movie.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're talking star power there.
Yeah, and that movie flopped.
Yeah.
Because it was terrible. That's the thing that makes me a little bit nervous about the Assassin's Creed movie. Not that, you know, that and Prince of Persia are the same game, but I could see where they could be similar flops. At least with Splinter Cell, I think that's closer to a James Bond movie, which those seem to do okay.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing. Like, I'm not a video gamer, but Splinter Cell, like, those games look cool. I'm interested in a movie about that. Assassin's Creed, like, I haven't played them. They look awesome. It's a movie about an assassin, whereas something like Prince of Persia, I don't know anything about that story. I don't think I care.
Neither did the people that wrote that movie.
And that's not going to make me want to go out and see it.
The first thing when you say movie about an assassin that comes to mind, like, they did that Hitman movie
and
with Timothy Olyphant. It was terrible.
And I wish it was good, because that should have been an awesome franchise.
Yeah, but they made it video gamey. I think there's kind of a stigma that, you know, either from being a video game title that causes people to not think that the movie's going to be any good, and then, you know, to try and serve the people that like the video game.
Or think you're trying to serve the
right,
people that
yeah,
like
they,
the video game.
They make it video gamey and then bad.
Like Doom, there was a lot of the first person, and it was fucking terrible. And nobody liked it, even hardcore Doom fans. And, I mean, look at the Ang Lee Hulk movie. Like, it's panned and universally hated. And he tried to make it comic booky. Like, he had, like, it was, at times it was like you were looking at a comic page. Like, I think fans of this and people in general want, like, I won't go see a Splinter Cell movie to see the video game on the big screen.
Right.
And so many of them try to do that, and they try to duplicate it, and it's just not going to work. You're limiting your audience that way.
I think the best video games that would make the best movies are the games that have the best stories. And I think Splinter Cell could fall into that. I think that Metal Gear, you could do some cool...
I've always been amazed that there hasn't been a Metal Gear movie.
Well, I mean, if you want to make the argument that Escape from New York is a Metal Gear movie, whatever. I won't argue with you. But that's what I mean. It's because of the story. It's not the action. It's not the gameplay. It's because it has a good story that you'd be interested in watching. Essentially, that's all Metal Gear games are anyway. They're just a long-ass cutscene with a couple button presses in between. So, I don't know. Do video game movies work?
They can. I mean, there's been so... I mean, it's hard to argue this when you have Resident Evil is on its like fifth installment, but I wouldn't say those work. Yeah, they make money and they're made relatively cheap, but I don't think there's fans of the Resident Evil video game that are clamoring for more of those because they're so far, they're two different animals by now.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, does it work? Well, what does that mean? And
has it worked yet?
Can you, that's what I was going to say. Can you find an example of a video game movie that quote unquote worked?
Off the top of my head, I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to think of the ones that have failed, but
Mario Brothers?
I mean, I don't know that worked. Because that's a bad movie.
It is. But I like that it was
Mortal Kombat?
Maybe Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat, maybe. That's probably the closest we've been so far. Tomb Raider, the first one did okay, but yeah, I think that was just Angelina Jolie in the outfit.
Yeah,
I don't think people were too stoked on the story or how the movie was. But I mean, something like Lara Croft, I think that could be rebooted and actually work.
Yeah,
if it's done with more of an idea than just Angelina Jolie in the outfit.
Yeah, just have her jump around and shoot the guns.
Yeah, I mean, if you do more with them, I mean, it's just. They can't be dumbed down.
They can work. They just haven't worked yet. Fair enough.
Consistently, yeah. I'm sure there might be one or two that we've forgotten or we've missed, but...
And if we have, send them to us, moviesonup@gmail.com. Tweet at us, @moviesonup. Let us know a video game movie that had worked. I submit to you Cloak and Dagger. See how far that gets.
That's not really a...
It's a movie, and there was a video game in it.
Well, The Wizard was about video games, and that's a good movie, but it wasn't adapted from a video game.
But they played the Cloak and Dagger video game in it. It just doesn't... I just don't think it existed in the real world. But that's exactly it. We're nitpicking to try and find something that worked. Thankfully, that segment is over. And being our Thanksgiving extravaganza here on Movies on Up, we are going to... give you, the listener, some things that we are thankful for from a movie kind of side. I asked Kevin to do it, and he did send me some stuff, so I will read what Kevin is thankful for. And we invite you guys to do the same thing if there is, you know, something that happened this year in the cinema that you're pleased about or is going to happen in the future that you heard about. Let us know. It's kind of a way to, you know, say what was cool about this year or what you're looking forward to next year. Kevin says, I'm thankful that, I says by you, I'm guessing he means me, Ryan, and Dave gave him the privilege to talk into a microphone weekly about movies. He's also thankful that Twilight is over. He's very much thankful for theaters with stadium seating. I could not agree more. And he's thankful for the Cedar Lee Theater for showing limited run and indie films, as well as doing a cult film series. Cedar Lee, pretty sweet theater up there in Cleveland. Check it out if you haven't been there yet. Show all sorts of fun shit. That's where Kevin saw Moonrise Kingdom far, far before either of us. Dave, you've got some stuff ready to go.
Yeah, but I got a couple from the Twitter box.
Oh, great.
I asked on Twitter, Michael Kalinich, @mkalinich. I asked what you were thankful for. He said, the comedy. Then I saw it. Huge letdown. Prometheus was great, though. Also, Jasmine McKenzie, @RocketJazz. I'm thankful when no one talks or checks their cells during a movie.
That's sad that you have to be thankful when people just act like human beings, but I agree.
Yeah, but as for mine, I'm not highlighting specific movies because there's a lot. I am thankful for 2012, though.
The movie?
No, God. 2012 is one of the best years for movies that I can remember in a long time. Usually, I can think of about 8 movies or so that I think are worthy of a top 10 list, and then I can think of ones that are close, but this year, I'm going to have to cut off of my top 10 list. Like, I could probably do a top 20 this year. There's a lot of great movies this year, and there's still a bunch that haven't even come out yet that I want to see. and ones I haven't seen. Like, it's been a great year for movies, and I hope people realize that. But that also goes to a couple other things. I'm thankful that the movie-going public in general are making smarter decisions. This summer, you had That's My Boy, which that kind of movie in the summer generally kills. Bombed.
Battleship. I mean, you stole one of mine. I was absolutely going to say, I'm thankful that people aren't just going to see movies that they think they ought to.
Yeah, like Battleship, Rock of Ages, Here Comes the Boom. These are all movies that generally a few years ago would have killed, would have been hits. But I think overall, movie going has become pickier. Maybe it's because of the higher ticket prices. Maybe it's because of the texting and stuff that you're only going to put up with it for something you really want to be there for. But overall, the decisions are smarter. People are more picky. They're demanding better quality. And I think it's happening. Like I said, 2012 is an amazing year for quality. And it especially shows up during the summer. The summers are getting better. You're getting more and more quality releases in the summer instead of just popcorn garbage.
And even the popcorn movies are getting better.
But even the ones that aren't, they're not like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. That's another one. Bombed.
Yeah.
I mean, people are just, they're spending their money more wisely.
But I mean, your big popcorn movies this summer, you know, the Avengers was early, so maybe we don't call that a popcorn movie, but that was awesome. You know, Dark Knight lived up. You didn't care for the Spider-Man, but I still thought it was good. We were trying to find what was the bomb this summer, and, you know, it was kind of tough. And you could find movies, you know, like Magic Mike and Ted that we talked about that had very little expectations, at least on our end, and yeah, turned out to be, you know, pretty good. They made a lot of money.
Yeah, so, I mean, just overall, like, I think it started a few years ago, and it just people are demanding more. So I'm thankful for that. Another thing I'm thankful for is a VOD, video on demand, or the digital releases like iTunes, Amazon, all that stuff, which is all under one umbrella, because it's making it possible to see movies no matter where you live.
Yeah.
Instead of having to wait months and months and months to see something when it comes out on DVD, you're able to see it right away.
Right. And I mean, I love the Cedar Lee, but it's tough to, you know, on the spur of the moment.
I mean, even us, it's an hour drive.
Yeah, exactly. So, but if I know, you know, they're showing something, you know, that I can catch VOD, I will gladly pay, you know, $7, $8, $9, even as much as $12 to rent something, to get it VOD, just so I can see it, because I want
it
to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that, it's come so far. If you look at this time last year, where VOD was compared to where it's at now, huge difference. I mean, you're having movies release on VOD the same day they're released in limited release in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane to me, and I think that's amazing, and it's awesome, and it does nothing but good for the industry and for movies, because the reason to make movies is for people to see them. So when you're limiting who can see them, that's not helping anybody. So when it's available.
Yeah, and it's not going to help your, it's not necessarily going to help your DVD sales. People aren't going to run out and buy a DVD sight unseen. You know, they'll rent it from Blockbuster.
Yeah, exactly, because people are spending their money more wise.
Yeah.
Like, it goes back to that too. But so I'm very thankful for VOD, for where it's come. I think there's still a lot of improvement to be made. I think it's coming. But this is another thing I'm thankful for that kind of goes in with that VOD. It's easier for small movies to be seen. Somebody like my buddy Ward Roberts can make Dust Up. And it's gotten buzz. It's getting legit reviews everywhere. Something like, you know, Compliance is a small movie. Something like Bindle Stiffs got picked up by Kevin Smith. Like, you could get your movie out there. Or go last year to Bellflower. Like, that got a lot of buzz. Like, it's not just up to the festival circuit now. As it used to be, if you didn't hit the festivals, nobody's going to see your movie. But now you can not do the festival circuit and still be seen.
It gives people more options, more choices. And I generally think that that's a good thing. And I think it's a pretty solid point.
And another thing that brings up, like I said, they just keep trickling off each other, is that gives filmmakers the freedom. Like, it gives, like, to use an example, like what Frank Darabont did with
The Mist.
You could say no to studios, or what Matthew Vaughn did with Kick-Ass. If nobody wants to make the movie you want to make, fuck them. You can make it, and it'll get seen somehow. So even your ones that can get studio backing, this is allowing them to go do what they want to do. And it's also like your big movie stars aren't hesitant to do smaller movies now because they know they're still going to be seen.
Yeah, or you know, what I was thinking was what Kevin Smith did with Red State, where he just, fuck it, I'll put it out myself. That was another big one that was on VOD.
Yes, and he toured the country with it.
Yeah, so again, it gives you options. Like if you could go out and see him, you know, he'd give you a Q&A session. If you couldn't, you know, check out the movie on VOD. He was just as happy if you did that. So yeah, hopefully for 2013, we'll have more choices on VOD, you know, quicker. That'll make our jobs a lot easier. That is for damn sure. There's just a couple things that I'm thankful for that really didn't get touched on by Dave or Kevin. Obviously, I'm excited, thankful even that we will have some new Star Wars movies. That's fun in my book. I am thankful that we have listeners to this show. It's nice to have folks download the show every week. It makes us feel good about ourselves. It's even better, you know, when we actually get some interaction from the listeners and we know what you're thankful for. That's great. So we definitely appreciate you sending those in. We are thankful for you. So if you know, there's...
I had one more before we move on.
Oh, good, because I was just going to call for some more.
I'm thankful for Ryan, and a lot of people don't know. I've been busy. I haven't been doing outlines for the show. When we first started this thing, 29 episodes ago?
Yeah, this is 29.
And things were a lot different, and the workload was like equal, like we were both doing everything. But lately, Ryan has been keeping this show alive. If it were just up to me, like I've had to miss weeks. I've been, you know, like weeks that I should have taken off, but Ryan's drive and everything made me want to keep going. So because of Ryan, he outlines, he records it, he edits it. Like this is Ryan. This is a night for Ryan. This isn't just an hour sitting at a mic. Like this is his Tuesday night is this show. So I don't think he gets enough credit for that. So for those of you that do listen, if you ever see Ryan, tell him thanks if you enjoy the show, because it wouldn't happen without him.
Unless you think it sucks now, in which case, keep it yourself. But either way, yeah. No,
if you think it sucks and you're still listening, that's on you. So
that's kind of a good point. Like, why would I mean? You don't have to download it.
So because of Ryan and his dedication to have it once a week, every week, we're still putting out shows, and we don't let my laziness get in the way. So
or your family obligations. I don't have a family, so I can do it. It's no big deal. Enough of that shit. Let's get on to some good stuff. Namely, death. The ABCs of Death. That is the first trailer that we're going to review. And this was one that Kevin has been in my ear about for about a week. It's produced by the folks at Magnet, who do some pretty fucked up shit. And they did not disappoint with this. Essentially, what it is, it's a giant anthology movie where every letter in the alphabet, A is for whatever, B, you get the point where we're going here, is kind of a short vignette, I guess, maybe 4 to 5 minutes. I watched T is for Talk. That's on YouTube.
YouTube, yeah.
Yeah. Gory. Yeah, that was about 4 to 5 minutes. And they're all like that. They're all the directors. Each letter has its own director. There is one that was co-directed, so there's one more director than actual letters in the alphabet.
Granted, I didn't research this project. I watched the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong how this movie was made. Was it just an open call that all these filmmakers just sent in movies and they just picked the best one for each letter?
I think so, yeah.
So you have 20. It's not like they went out and got 26 big-time directors. They let people make it and they picked their favorites. And
I feel
released.
Like it was like a fan, like almost like the way that some fan films get put together. This was kind of the same thing. Like, hey, you know, if you're a horror director, and we use that term loosely, you know, submit what you have. And you know,
which is an awesome idea.
Yeah.
I like that idea about it. The movie, the trailer doesn't really show much, so it's hard to really gauge how the film's going to be, but the idea enough is for me to watch.
It definitely looks, you know, different. There's at least one of the movies is one of the segments is claymation.
And it looked like some animation in there. Like, yeah. It looked like there's a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, and it's all going to be super violent. So if you're into, you know, the torture porn genre, you know, this could be pretty good. So, yeah, it's hard to to talk about a trailer for a movie that's essentially, you know, like a bunch of movies all kind of smashed together. But, you know, if you're into seeing heads get smashed up, cut off, cut into, check out this one. Not as much head smashing in The Heat. It is the follow-up from Paul Feig, the guy that brought you Bridesmaids, which one of us liked, one of us really didn't care for as much. Melissa McCarthy is back, and she's this time teaming up with Sandra Bullock in a buddy cop movie with a female twist.
We talked about this when it was first announced. That's weird that now movies that we talked about
are now having trailers.
Are now in trailers. So yeah. I like the idea that it's a female buddy cop movie. I like Sandra Bullock in comedies. Like, if you take the rom out of it, like, I think she's a great comedy actress. And Melissa McCarthy, I think, is fucking hilarious. Like, I think this will be funny. I really do.
I think it will be funny. It looks, to me,
it looks very cliche. It looks very cut and paste.
It's very cliche. To me, it looks like the girl version of Cop Out. And
Which I enjoyed.
Yeah, I didn't mind either. But I hate that. It's okay. Bridesmaids is the girl version of The Hangover. This is the girl. We're probably doing it a disservice by doing that. It's the girl version of. Why can't it be its own thing? But
I mean, it is.
From the trailer, that's what it seems.
It looks just like a buddy cop movie. Like, yeah. It just looks like a female buddy cop movie. You have a good cop, bad cop. You have FBI agent, hard-nosed, plays by her own rules, cops. So, I mean, it's a story we've seen a million times. I think Bullock and McCarthy will be worth watching it for.
Sure, yeah. They're both good. They're both funny. I think together they will be funny. It'll be worth watching. I did for what it was worth. I liked Bridesmaids, so I'll check this out.
I didn't hate Bridesmaids. You always say I hated Bridesmaids.
I do hate Bridesmaids. If you want to see Dave get angry, sit down and watch Bridesmaids with him. The next movie makes me busy on so many different levels. I don't know. Between the two stars, I don't know who I want to mate with more. Tina Fey or Paul Rudd are in Admission together, which is not necessarily a story we've seen often, where Tina Fey plays an admission officer for, I think it's Princeton, one of those Ivy League schools, and she comes across Paul Rudd, who is a teacher and may have found Tina Fey's son she put up for adoption a long time ago.
I love this cast. You put Paul Rudd and Tina Fey in a movie together, I'm on board instantly.
Yep.
The trailer didn't excite me as much as I wanted it to. I realize it's not just a straightforward comedy.
Right.
Which, with those two in the lead, I kind of wish it was, because that's what they're so good at. And them two doing comedy together would be amazing to see. But they're also both very talented, so I think them bouncing off each other in this will also be entertaining to see, but it lacked the kind of charm that I would want out of a trailer starring these two.
Yeah, you're right. I think, at least for me, the trailer, it was irrelevant. You know, whatever they show, like, I'm going to go see
pretty
it.
Pretty much, yeah.
Because of, you know, what I expect out of the two leads. And I think that, you know, maybe we're setting this up to be a failure because we have such high expectations, being that it's Tina Fey and Paul Rudd. But I mean, check it out. Let us know what you think. The trailer did seem a bit underwhelming.
Because honestly, if you replace Paul Rudd, replace either one of them. Put like Josh Duhamel in Paul Rudd's place, or I don't know, any female in Tina Fey's place. I don't think I'm interested in seeing it. Like, based on the trailer alone, I don't think I would see this movie.
I think I would see if it was just a Paul Rudd movie. I mean, I've gone to see movies strictly because Paul Rudd was in them. And I would do the same thing for Tina Fey. But I think it's the two of them together, Wonder Twins power, activate a kick-ass movie, that we might be setting this up. There's no way it could possibly live up to the hype that maybe we'll give it. This next one, I mean, it's based off a novel that apparently was a bestseller. You'd probably know more about that than I would. Another one that may have kind of some hype to it, a built-in audience, if you will. The Mortal Instruments, City of Bones.
Yeah, the book was City of Bones, and there's City of Bones, City of Glass, City of Ashes, and then City of Fallen Angels. I haven't read these books. I look at them all the time, and I've been close to reading them a bunch.
I think if you look at a book, it is pretty close to reading it.
Like, I've toyed with whether I want to read these or not, and I hear a lot of good things about them. They just seem too young adulty for me.
The trailer makes me think otherwise,
exactly.
Though.
Exactly, and there's always enough there that makes me interested. Like, if I see the, I'll see it. I will see the movie because the story does interest me enough. It's a girl that could see. It's
some
angels
half
and demons.
Angel thing.
It's kind of, it could be cool. There's a lot of fighting in just the trailer.
Yeah.
It's Lily Collins, which, all right. Yeah, I like her.
I think Lena Headley's in the movie. The guy, I can't think of the English dude that was on Mad Men. I can't think of his name offhand. But he looks like he's kind of the mentor figure in the movie. And I like him. He's good enough. I mean, it does. Like, I was expecting kind of like a Twilight spinoff thing, but this definitely, like, there was some ass kicking in it in just the 2-3 minute trailer.
And like, the best way I could sum up this book is, like, I've always debated reading it. There was this, I work with books with one of my jobs, so that's where the story comes in. There was like a big muscular, like, cop looking for a book one day, and he was looking at it. He's like, "Have you read these?" I'm like, "No, I don't know if they're too young adulty for me." He's like, "I'm just going to grab it." He's like, "It seems cool." I said, "It does." He came back the next day to buy the other two books. So, I mean, he liked it that much. So that's a big muscular dude who's much muscularly than me. So
if muscular dudes like this movie or like the books, then what's your excuse?
I'll see it. Like, I'll see it. And if I like it, I'll go read the I'll go read them all. But
two biceps up.
Yeah. Yeah, and a couple tries.
That's how we're going to review movies from now on. Although I think between like all three of our hosts, I don't think we have two biceps. Jared Harris was the guy I was trying to think of.
From Jonathan Rhys Meyers is still
from the Mad Men. Yeah, he's in that movie too.
I can't look at Jonathan Rhys Meyers without thinking
Jonathan Rhys Davies?
No, without thinking like, this doesn't make any sense.
Oh.
He just has that kind of face that makes me think, I don't understand what's going on right now.
I don't understand what's going on right now. I'll tell you what's going on right now. We are skipping to the box office for this week. I'm kind of excited. I think we're both probably excited because...
Red Dawn, Wolverines.
Absolutely. That is, of course, between the three movies that are coming out this Wednesday, which would be today, actually, as you are available to listen to this. Three movies coming out. Red Dawn is one of them. The other two, Life of Pi and Rise of the Guardians.
I think Rise of the Guardians looks awesome.
I know you do.
I might be alone in thinking that.
Probably
I guess,
not.
I guess time will tell, but do any of these, they don't unseat Twilight?
I don't think so.
Do they even come close?
You know, I think
because you're battling Bond,
you're battling Bond,
Wreck-It Ralph.
I kind of feel like if any of them are going to come close, you know, it'd be Rise of the Guardians because it's the new family movie.
Which it could dig into the Wreck-It Ralph money a little bit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, I mean, you're looking at a movie that's got to be, I mean, to come close to Twilight, you've got to be over $100 million.
Twilight will probably be in the 70-80 range.
You think so?
Yeah. For Friday to Sunday. Friday through Sunday, I think it'll be in the 70 range.
Yeah, I always forget that's how you do things. Because, I mean, I'm taking into account like...
You go Wednesday through Sunday.
Yeah, because it's when it comes out. And it's a holiday weekend. I don't know. The box office is kind of your thing. So, I mean, you... I seed.
I think Rise of the Guardians could come in second. I think it could beat out Wreck-It Ralph, Skyfall...
In the new movies.
Yeah.
The Wolverines.
I think that might be sneaky, though, because I think it's dumb enough to
appeal. Not anymore. I, you know, when we started this podcast, I'd agree with you. But now, no, people are smarter than that.
I hope so. But, I mean, it is an action movie, and if you contrast it with everything else coming out, like, other than Taken 2, this is really the only option for that.
Bond.
I consider them a little different. I consider that more like a cerebral action movie. Yeah, this maybe. Is just like a essentially a November popcorn movie, which the only thing I would compare it to that's out right now is Taken 2, which had its audience, and they haven't had anything in a while. So I could see it making some money. I don't know what, though.
Yeah, I don't know who the audience for this movie is that they're not going to want to either go see Twilight or they're not going to want to see something else. But so, okay, over-under, Rise of the Guardians.
45. For Friday through Sunday?
Fine.
I don't know what kind of buzz there is for this movie. It's advertised heavily.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of trailers.
What kind
I'm going to go over just because I feel like it's the new family movie.
I'll go over. Okay. Red Dawn 20.
I'll take under.
I'm taking under. Life of Pi, probably 11.
I'm going to take over.
That one's iffy because I don't know. I think that's probably only in about 1,500 theaters or so.
It's in Youngstown.
I'm going to go, what'd I say? 11?
You said 11. 11?
I'm going to go under.
Negative 11? Okay. Negative 11 for Dave. Limited releases this week. Really just Hitchcock. That'll be on 16 screens. Silver Linings Playbook is expanding to 420 theaters. I don't think it'll be around here, but a couple weeks, I think it will be. That's got some good buzz. Watch this for this week. I'm going to let, I might revise that, seeing what you've put for what we should be watching this week. You've got, really, the only one of us that has a movie you actually should watch is Kevin. So I'll make Kevin, no, Kevin can go last.
Kevin said Planes, Trains,
you
and Automobiles.
You son of a bitch! I was going to have Kevin's redeem ours because they're awful.
To be fair, I typed that in. Kevin left it blank.
Oh.
I added that so I didn't have three.
Oh.
Because that's one of the best Thanksgiving movies ever.
Yes.
The second and third best Thanksgiving movies ever. Dutch, starring Ed O'Neill. Love that movie. It's so underrated. It's such a fun movie. And then this movie, I will watch no matter how many times it's on TV. I've seen it 1,000,000,000 times. I hate the lead and have never been a fan. But goddamn is Carla Gugino so fucking cute. Son-in-Law.
So I guess that would make
the
fourth.
The three best Thanksgiving movies ever.
The fourth best Thanksgiving movie. Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead. From Lloyd Kaufman and his friends at Troma. It's a Troma movie about possessed turkeys. I mean, I don't know what more you need to know to go on, whether or not this will be the movie for you. If you've never seen a Troma movie, don't make this your first. If you have seen Troma, you haven't checked this one out yet, I can't think of a better excuse to watch Poultrygeist than, you know, after you have a great dinner on Thursday, you've listened to our podcast, you're winding things down. Yeah, pop on Poultrygeist. I think it's streaming on Netflix. Don't quote me on that. If it's not, I'm sure just run down to your local video establishment. They'll probably have it. So that's what you should probably watch this week. Three shitty movies and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. If you watch any of those, or preferably if you got some things you're thankful for, movie-related or otherwise, what the hell, you can send them to us. You can tweet at us, at MoviesOnUp. You can email them to us, moviesonup@gmail.com. We'll read them on next week's show. You can leave them on our Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/moviesonup. Or you could put a comment in our blog for this episode at moviesonup.com.
If you want more of me, since I took the week off this week, you can find me at Dave Bacella on Twitter. Or check out my other show, Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. Our Thanksgiving special this week went up. It's the
what's it called?
The Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave presents Eric and Dave First Annual Cranberry Sauce Extrava Yam Yums Turkey Fest Volume 1 The Gravy Thon. Something like that.
Yes, give
so
or take.
Find it in iTunes or at ericanddave.com.
And type
Eric
in that exact same title. And
it was a lot of fun, that episode. So check that out. Or I'll throw up, I made a Twilight movie. I don't know why I forgot to mention it. I made a Twilight cartoon. I don't remember which movie it came out with, but I'll throw that up on our Facebook page. So check out my Twilight cartoon that I made. And I think that's it for me.
Yeah, Kevin, he's on Twitter.
At Kevin Bradway.
Yeah, he's on the Facebook too. His name's Kevin Bradway. I'm sure that factors into his Facebook handle at some point. He's also manning our Pinterest. I don't know how you get about getting at us on there, but if you are, if you can figure Pinterest out, Kevin's the one that keeps that humming, so to speak.
Were you being facetious by saying Pinterest, or are you honestly saying Pinterest?
I meant to say Instagram.
I was
going to
say. At first, I thought you were joking, but then I thought, Kevin, Ryan really thinks we have a Pinterest page.
No, I don't think we do. Although, fuck, I don't know. Like, I don't know any of the social media aspects
Instagram.
Of this show.
We have an Instagram page.
Yeah, we've got one of those, which Kevin does. He probably fucking does Pinterest, too. I don't know. He's kind of like that. Likes to pin things. But, hey, maybe if that's what we need to do, if we need to have a Pinterest page, we'll get somebody will do it for us. We'll crowdsource that. I don't know what we're doing next week. I don't know who's going to be here.
I'll be here, probably.
All right, Dave will be here, at the very least. Somebody will be here. There will be some Movies on Up for you, some post-Turkey Day Movies on Up goodness, where I will probably gush about how much I loved Life of Pi.
And I'll talk about how much I wish I'd have seen Rise of the Guardians.
So you have that to look forward to next week. Until then, ladies and gentlemen, thank you.
Keep it up.
And keep it up.